The times are changing. Figured that one out yet? The times, they are changing. Things are changing. Things are happening. You know, I've been around for a few years. I was born the year Martin Luther King graduated from seminary. I was 18 months old when Rosa Parks sat on a bus. I was, five when John Kennedy was elected, 9 when he was assassinated, or I guess 8 when he was assassinated, 10 or 9 when Selma, Alabama happened, 13 when Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King were assassinated, 18 when the Democratic Convention, actually it was years, let me think about that, I wouldn't have been 18, I've been 13 when the Democratic National Convention, I was 15 when 4 were lying dead in Ohio. You know, that was my formative period, and you can see why I'm so screwed up, right? I went through some pretty radical changes in my early years, and you know, things are about as radically changed now as they could be. You know, whether it's good or bad, whether it's positive or negative, whether it's going to be beneficial or not, is not up to what is happening, but it's up to you to decide for yourself whether it's good or bad or right or wrong, or if you're going to grow through it or groan through it. Groan, you know, whine and moan and groan. Oh, that's kind of my fallback position quite often. I start moaning and groaning and whining and such. We can either grow through it or groan through it. A lot of us are like the guy sitting at the end of the bar, you know, and he's sitting there and Jesus walks in the door and Jesus walks up to the first guy and the first guy's blind. You know, he's got these black glasses on and Jesus lays hands on him. The man says, "I can see, I can see." And then he walks up to the next guy who's on crutches and he's lame and he touches him and the man throws his crutches away. "I can walk again." And he walks up to the guy at the end of the bar and he says, "Don't touch me, I'm on disability." We don't want to change, right? We don't want to change. We don't want to give up what's comfortable for us. You know, if I'm healed, I might have to actually do something. I might actually have to get out there and be, you know, expressing what it is mine to be. But I can sit here and be comfortable in my sickness, whether it's physical or mental or emotional or relationship or financial, all those diseases that we carry around with us. You know, these limitations, that lack and limitation that we have bought into for ourselves, all those stories about why we can or can't or should or shouldn't or et cetera, et cetera. But the times are changing. This is an opportunity every day. It's not just what's going on out there. It's what's going on in here. And that brings us to our gospel story for today. I've been working with the Gospel of John, which is great. You know, today's a love day. Right? I got that, heard something about that, you know, with the music. And John is the disciple whom Jesus loved. And he, in the 12... the system, the 12 spiritual faculties, or the 12 powers of man, John stands for love. And he's the one that was laying against Jesus' breast at the Last Supper. And that's as far as I'm going to go for that one. You can create your own images from that. But, you know, love, John, is also the gospel of transformation. The gospel of transformation, that he brought a transformative message that the three synoptic gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke tell basically the same story. That's what synoptic means. They're telling the same story. And so he came along possibly 30 years later. This came into writing, but very likely he was telling he had a different image, a spiritual image of Jesus. And he tells a different story. There's very few of the stories in John that are repeated in the others. There's temptations of the wilderness, there's the feeding of the 5,000, and there's the crucifixion. I think that's about it. There might be one more that didn't come to mind at the moment. But the rest of the tales, and he structures it in such a way that we know that this is a transformational experience, because it's structured around 7 signs or 7 miracles. And I believe it's the same writer that wrote the Revelation, which actually was written earlier than the Gospel of John, because that's structured around the seven visions And each of those seven visions have seven different elements, and some of those seven elements have seven elements. So you think seven might be an important number. And it harkens back to the book of Genesis with the story of creation in 7 days, right, from which we get our week, your seven-day week. That's that basic came from the book of Genesis, and that's a whole different story, so I'm not going to go too much with that. And he begins his gospel with an introduction about the Word and the power of the Word, which harkens back again to those 7 days of creation, because in the beginning was the Word. And what was the Word? The Word was God said on the end of each day, God said. That power, that creative power of the Word. And then we get into the different miracles. The first miracle being the transformation of the water into wine, from the natural to the spiritual. Not to say that we are making the natural spiritual, but we are elevating our conscious awareness of what is to what can be and what it truly is. There's the appearances, the natural, the outer appearances, and then there's the spiritual reality. So we're raising, elevating our awareness to that spiritual reality. And then we have the healing of the nobleman's son, or the official's son. And this is a Roman. This is not somebody who's of the chosen people. He's not a unity student, right? This is somebody who's, you know, fundamentalist in some other faith or religion. I mean, he's over. You know, Jesus heals the nobleman's son. It's a universal. Unless we bring all parts of ourselves in until we embrace every part of ourself, which is, I'm going like this because you're all part of me and you all represent something within me, including the people I see on the news and the people I see out on the street. They all represent parts of me. Until I embrace all of that, including what Jung calls the shadow self, or that part we really don't want to look at, that we're hiding from, that's when the transformation comes, the universal. And now we're on to the third of the seven signs this week. And we're talking about the healing of the man at Bethsaida, also pronounced Bethesda or Bethsaida. Bethsaida. And at Bethsaida, there's five porticos. Remember five? You know, what do we have? What do we have? Five. We've got five fingers, five toes, five senses, five holes in our head. Right? It's sense consciousness. So he's coming into this area, and there's these five porticos, which are basically covered porches, areas where people are applying their trade. Let me go ahead and read from the gospel here. Put my eyes on. Right, so Jesus is there in Jerusalem. There's a sheep gate, by the sheep gate. And the sheep gate, of course, sheep are docile. They are easily led. They're obedient. So we're entering by the sheep gate through obedience. And there's a pool called Bethsaida, which has five porticos. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, paralyzed. One man was there who had been ill for 38 years. He'd been there for 38 years. So here, you get the scene. We got to set the scene here, right? This is materia medica. This is back in the days when they used to practice such advanced techniques as bloodletting and leeching and, you know, those kinds of things that would cure people of their humors and the different, you know, release the demons and that were, you know, those advanced techniques that they used to have back 2,000 years ago. Well, he's spiritual consciousness. Jesus, who represents that spiritual awareness, the awareness of God in me and within all of creation, that we are one, enters into this physical healing sanctuary. He doesn't avoid it, right? He enters into it. And here he finds this man who's been there for 38 years. And there's a lot of importance to that number of 38. You know, it's not just thrown in there in happenstance. Whether he had actually been there 38 years or not, it's kind of hard to believe that somebody who had been sick for 38 years would still be alive in that time, and because 38 was kind of a long time to live anyway. But the number 38, now, 38 is just short of 40, isn't it? What do we know about 40? There was 40 days and 40 nights. There was 40 years in the wilderness. There was 40 this, 40 that. 40 is the time it takes. It's symbolic for the time it takes. So when Moses was in the wilderness for 40 years, and Elijah was in the cave for 40 days and 40 nights, and Noah was on the ark for 40 days and 40 nights. You know that it's the time it takes. It's an indefinite period of time, but the time it takes to reach that level of consciousness, to get to that point. So here's a guy who's been there 38 years. He's not there. He's not ready yet, right? He hasn't gotten there yet. And there's a reason it's 38 and not 39, because 3 plus 8 is 11, and 3 plus 9 is 12. 12 is a spiritual number, so it's 38, right? He's not quite there on a spiritual level or a consciousness level. It's pretty obvious. And so Jesus enters in, and he asks him one question. He says, Jesus saw him and knew he had been lying there a long time, and he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" Very simple. Now, in the King James Version, I go back and forth because I love the wording sometimes, the King James, but it's got a lot of errors to it. So in the King James, it says, "Wilt thou be made whole?" You heard that before? "Wilt thou be made whole?" Are you willing to be healed? Do you want to be healed? Let me ask you, do you want to be healed? Yeah. Ah, I heard a couple. Kind of weak, but, you know, a little slow. Let me ask you again, do you want to be healed?
Yes.
Yes. I'm standing on this stage. I'm not floating above it, right? I have not ascended yet. So I've got some healing work to do, right? If you're sitting in those seats, there's something in your life that needs to be healed. It may not be your body. It may not be your finances. It may not be, you know, a mental issue or a relationship issue with somebody else. You know, just our relationship with ourselves. You know, if we're in fear and doubt and loathing, you know, that's a healing need right there, I'll tell you. You know, that's the most debilitating thing in the world. You know, it's called anxiety or depression, or, you know, that's what it leads to. You know, we're all a little bit bipolar, I think, to a certain extent, right? You know, we're kind of down, and then we're up, and then we're down, and then we're up. But we're just not quite far enough that we need medication, at least most of us. Some of us might, and that's okay. That's where we're at. So Jesus enters in, he asks the question, "Do you want to be healed?" And of course the man says, yes, right? No, this is a good one. This is a good one. He says, "The sick man answered him, 'Sir, I have no man to put me in the pool when the water is troubled. While I'm going, another one steps down before me.'" Poor guy, you know. Wine. One little bread with that wine, right? Bread and cheese with that wine. Does that sound familiar to anybody else? You know, we've got all these reasons why we can't be healed. Right? I don't have enough money to see the right doctor, or I've got this genetic thing, or I've got, if you were living with the woman I was living with, you know, all those excuses why we can't be healed. Doesn't sound like he's willing, does it? He's not saying, I'm willing to be healed. But there's still potential for being healed. There's still potential. There has to be a level of willingness in there. And so Jesus does what is necessary to spark that willingness within him. And what does he say? He says, "Rise, take up your pallet, and walk." Now, he could have just very easily said, "No, I can't. I'm sick. I'm invalid. I can't pick up my pallet." But instead, what does he do? He picks up his pallet and he walks. It's that simple, folks. It's that simple. The Christ within you, the divine with you, is calling you to pick up your pallet and walk. Do what is yours to do. Right? The paralysis of analysis. We're trying to figure out the right thing to do. Just do it. I don't like Nike very well, but I do like their slogan. Just do it. Right? We know what to do. It's in the doing that we seem to fall back on. So there's the five porches: physical, consciousness. We have the spiritual awareness coming down within us through prayer and meditation, of course. We have to prepare ourselves through prayer and meditation to receive that divine guidance. When and where is the right time to pick up our pallet and walk, which is right now? Jesus, Christ consciousness, represents that transcendent living. Transcendent living that we all have the possibility to do. We can transcend our life circumstances. Just because we live in poverty or just because our bodies are not expressing the level of health and vitality, or just because, you know, our relationship isn't, you know, the perfect, or our job or our car or whatever it is that it, we think is, you know, should be something different. It doesn't have to be any different than what it is in order for us to live in that transcendent reality of peace, of wholeness, of joy, of contentment, of fulfillment. It's our choice whether we continue to whine and moan and groan, or we pick up our pallet and walk. So I invite you to pick up your pallet and walk. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of value in material science, right? Jesus didn't come into Bethsaida and turn over the tables like he did in the temple. No, he just came in and came to one person who he knew had the potential to experience a healing. He didn't say, this is wrong, don't do it this way. You know, he didn't say, you're making my father's house a den of thieves. No, he respected the science of the day, if you will. And my experience, you know, I have a Bachelor of Science. It doesn't make me a scientist, but I do have an appreciation for science. You know, I enjoy physics and chemistry to a certain extent, you know, and enjoy the new physics, quantum physics. Einstein was the one who coined that quantum physics idea, and how science and scientists really are proving the biblical message. As long as you look beyond the doctrine and the dogma of the fundamentalist religions who say, well, this is what it means and it can't mean anything else. When we're open to a new interpretation, a growing awareness of what these things mean, it's like the 7 days of creation. Well, a day is a million years, who knows? And it's periods of growth, of involvement, if you will, where certain things occur in consciousness, and it parallels the evolutionary scale of the scientific evolution. You know, I was watching Brian Swimmy again the other day, or actually last night, with my wife Kathy, who says hi to everybody, by the way. And he was talking about, you know, the 14 plus billion years of the universe and these different stages of things that happened during that period of time, where first you had basically nothing, and then you have something, where you have random chaos, and then you start having order, and we start having the galaxies being formed, and then we have the stars being formed, and then the solar systems, and the planets cool enough so that we start having life, you know, and life evolves enough so it begins to breathe and move on its own. And then it begins to have eyes and ears and noses, and it actually starts seeing itself, and then it has these brains that can begin to think. And then we have Homo sapiens, where we actually are conscious, self-aware beings. I mean, it's a long process that is simplified in the book of Genesis as 7 days, but it's, you know, it parallels. There's if we open our minds, we can see how science and religion come together. Einstein used the term that he talked about, there being packets of wholeness. In that quantum theory, there's packets of wholeness. Now in string theory, we're seeing we're down to this very small subatomic energy particle split off called strings. They're not energy and they're not particles, they're both. You know, they're the potential for being that creates all of the atoms, etc. You know, it's all theoretical because we haven't created anything that can see that small yet. But there's packets of wholeness that come together to create a greater whole. a higher evolution of wholeness. One, the mathematicians talk about the torus. And the torus is, you can think of it as a self-existing whole or a self-regulating whole. You can think of the earth with its north and south poles and the energy that flows around and through. Just like if you understand the kundalini in our bodies, the energy that flows up and down our spines, but it flows up and around and back in. And it's visual. You can visually imagine an apple if you cut it in half and you can see the core. That kind of symbolizes that energy flow of the torus. And the old ancient Gaia concept of the earth as a self-regulating. And so as climate changes, as it heats up and cools down, that we see more weather happening. We see the oceans doing what they're doing, but the earth is regulating itself. It's responding to what's occurring for it. There's a philosopher by the name of J.J. Clark who wrote a book about the self-creating universe, a self-creating universe. And so another name for God is the universe, right? It's a self-creating universe. That doesn't mean that it is a man up in the sky we call the universe. No, it's that the universe is conscious. It has a consciousness of its own, and it's whole and complete. Brian Swimmy, as I was mentioning, talks about emergence, that the universe is individuating as you and me and as all of creation. That as it, as I mentioned earlier, as it came out of nothing, there was something, and then there was galaxies, and then there was stars, and then there was planets, and then there was plants, and then there was animals, and then there was people, and then there were conscious people that were self-reflecting. And that the universe is out-picturing, is emerging, is individuating as all of creation. And that's my concept of God that I had before these scientific concepts, which were evolving in a little different sphere and probably predate my existence, come together. That's my God is I am. God is coming into existence as you and as me, which brings me to the third S, along with the seven signs and seven miracles. I'm giving you my seven S's of spiritual awareness or spiritual living. And these are not, in order in a way of, like step one, step two, step three, that sort of thing. But they all exist and are emerging within us. The first one was synchronicity. Remember that? Meaningful coincidences. I think about how my wife and I met, and I was dating some young lady, pretty young lady. She was a model, and I thought, I might be ready to settle down. Well, the job ended, and she moved away, and that's the last I saw of her. And not too long later, my wife showed up, and we started dating. It's like I had to be, this other young lady kind of made me ready to settle down, And then my wife met, it's a bigger, longer story than that. But the synchronicity of that and how many synchronicities there are in our life and being aware of those meaningful coincidences in our life. That's one of the first steps in spiritual awareness, to realizing that God is working through coincidences. It's God's way of maintaining anonymity for those of us who are in 12 steps. God maintains its anonymity by meaningful coincidences. Things happen for a reason. And if we're not experiencing synchronicity, if we're not experiencing miracles, if we're not experiencing these meaningful coincidences in our life, something's wrong. We're not looking for them. Because they're happening all the time. We've found jobs, we've found friends, we've, found deals on eBay, whatever it is, that came because of synchronicity. It's all working together. And then the second one, was synergy. Synergy, where two or more are gathered, therefore so am I. That the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That's the words of Aristotle. The sum is greater than the whole of its the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That where two or more are gathered, therefore so am I. That when we get together with other people, and that's why we have a church, right? That's why we have gatherings of believers, iglesia from the Greek. interpreted as church, iglesia, which means a gathering of believers. We come together so that we can be more than we can be individually. And that brings us to our third S, which is synthesis. What happens when we bring two together, right? In Hegel's dialectic, from which this is taken, we have thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. We have the thesis. We have, now this applies really well to boards of churches and, you know, the things going on in organizations, right? You have the thesis. You say, we're going to do this. And then you have the antithesis. It says, no, we're not. We've never done it that way before. We can't do it that way. We don't have enough money. We don't, blah, blah, blah. You know, we have the blowback. We have, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? And one thing I've learned over the years is that the faster and with more energy that I put into the thesis, the stronger and the greater is the pushback, right? And so, and especially in churches and organizations, it's best to, okay, here's an idea. Let's talk about it. Let's flesh it out. Let's get everybody involved. Let's have some community meetings. Let's see how this might work out. And so then the pushback, if we're slow and steady, then the pushback is slow and steady. And it's always going to be that pushback. But if we allow for the pushback, if we allow for the antithesis, what happens? It evolves into something greater than it would have been by itself. That's called the synthesis. Synthesis. So understanding that natural process, that law of physics, action, reaction, and transcendence. So we see this transcendence happening. So realizing that in ourselves. So whenever we have a challenge in our lives, we can look at it not as something that's in our way, but it's something that is calling us to move ever higher in consciousness. Because I'm putting forth the belief, the understanding, the proposition that I am a spiritual being. I live in a spiritual universe, and my life is governed by spiritual laws. And then there's going to be all this physical stuff that comes up and says, well, what about your knee? Well, I've got, you know, I don't know where that's come from. You know, what about your gizzard? To use one of my friend, Viralminto. I don't know if any of you ever experienced Viralminto, but he used to talk about his gizzard because he used to talk about his kidney. Then he started having kidney problems. So he started calling about his gizzard, right? He says, well, you know, I got this thing in my gizzard. And then that negative energy is flying around your body going, where's the gizzard? Where's the gizzard? Can't find it, right? So if I'm saying, you know, I'm whole, you know, whole and complete just as I am, well then, you know, and what do we do? Well, okay, that's calling for me to move higher, to live cleaner, to eat better, whatever it is, right? To help somebody else, to get out of my own insanity. That's third force, the synthesis, so that third force can come into play. We can allow the second force to kill us, right? To dampen us down and not do anything. But it is ours to do something. The change is here. The change has come. Things are changing. The times are changing. Our lives are constantly changing. The one constant is change. It's our choice how we relate to that change. How we relate to that change. And to affirm that I am one with the transcendent life of God. I am one with the transcendent life of God, that energy that transcends all resistance. Right? I am one with the transcendent life of God. Together, I am one with the transcendent life of God. I live in peace, light, and love. I live in peace, light, and love. I am one with the transcendent life of God. Together, I am one with the transcendent life of God. I live in peace, light, and love. Together, I live in peace, light, and love. We'll take that all together as one statement. I am one with the transcendent life of God. I live in peace, light, and love. And so it is, and so it shall be. Thank you, God. Amen. Yay, God. And thank you all for being here today. God bless.